Blog Talk Radio.
As we wrap up Women's History Month, we turn to the future and look at the role of women in the green movement. One of the leading experts in the field is Boston-based Crystal Johnson. She is the founder and principal of ISIS, Integrative Sustainability and Environmental Solutions. We'll ask Crystal to give definitions on all things green to help us to understand the economy and the political implications of environmental sustainability in a throwaway world. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and thank you so much for coming to the show and listening either live or as an archive. I'm excited about our guest today, but before we begin, I always want to let you know what's going on with the Multicultural Symposium Series. And this past week, we just launched our 2012 webinar series. Had a great interactive session that dealt with negotiation strategies for women of color. It is going to be available coming this weekend for all the members of the Multicultural Symposium Series, so you can use your password and download it to your heart's desire when it's an on-demand capability, and certainly one of the wonderful features of becoming a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. We have a whole list of different topics focused on diversity, inclusion, and multicultural issues that will take place between now and the end of the year. We'll release that list next week and talk about it a little bit more as time goes on. Typically, there'll be one or two webinars each month. Again, these are all focused on various issues of multicultural aspects and situations and circumstances, and you'll have an opportunity to take advantage of it. If you are interested in membership with the Multicultural Symposium Series, it's very affordable. It doesn't matter where you live, where you operate from, because much of our activity is ultimately archived. If you can't listen live to the webinars, you can certainly download them. We have our conference coming up next, this coming October, October 25th. That may be of interest to many of you. And we just had our Black History Breakfast that took place in February. And Connections Magazine is coming out this summer. So just an awful lot of things taking place, and it's all tied in to becoming a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. Just for a low price of $99 for a 12-month period, or $25 if you are a student. I just had a student to sign up this week. We love to bring students on board. Whether you're a graduate student or a high school student or a college student, it's the same affordable rate. You can go to mssconnect.com, mssconnect.com, and find out more about membership, all the other activities that we have, and ways that you can participate as an active member of our multicultural world. More information about my speaking services can be found at the other website, TellCarol, TellCarole, .com, and you can find out more about my speaking services on the same topic, empowerment, leadership, and other things that I do as a community builder. Well, I'm very excited because we're going to talk about a subject that people talk about, we talk over, we hear an awful lot about, but I want to sort of drill down and get more information from our guest who has been in this field for 20 years. It's hard to believe just looking at her. She looks like she just stepped out of college, but she has been around for a while, and certainly the credentials are very admirable. You can go and read all about her at my blog at TellCarol, TellCarole.com, and click on Carol's blog, and then you'll have a chance to read her biographical information and link to her website as well. But Crystal Johnson is the founder of, I'm going to make sure that I'm pronouncing it correctly, ISIS, but more importantly, she cares about the economy, she cares about the environment, and how we're going to sustain ourselves going forward. Crystal Johnson, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really pleased to be here.
I'm glad that you're here. Now, is it integrative sustainability?
Yes, it is. As far as for ISIS, yes. I created a name that really blended some new concepts, which is sustainability, as well as tying it to the root of sustainability, which was always the environmental experience, and wanted to also include the reference for integrative because that accounts for energy, natural resources, water, and other elements that are assessed in environmental. And there's been a movement, I'm not sure if many people are aware of that. We've always had an environmental movement. And then as it started to go a little bit more mainstream, it really shifted to green with a little bit less pressure, not to make it a little bit hard for the general population, I feel, to absorb and implement. And then when it reached over into the business sector as far as responsibility as a business on supply chain or how to be lean with energy and waste management or any type of impact on a resource, it then became sustainable. And sustainability became the term. So there's been an evolution in the language. And I don't like to separate it too much from the root of it, which is environmental impacts. And so I do want to connect sustainability always back to the origins.
That's really helpful, even for me to understand, because I hear these words all the time. I hear about sustainability. I hear about it in the nonprofit community quite a bit.
Yes.
So this helps me to understand that there are business implications with what you're saying. I'm sorry, go ahead.
For the word sustainable, because I even have, there are many debates about it when you're talking about sustainable. What are you referring to? Because there can be, with the sustainable as far as providing for use of a resource that's long-term so that you're managing it. And so whatever action you have has long-term plans rather than is really short-sighted. So therefore not sustainable versus some people think about, is it in relation to the economy so that it's contributing to, you know, the overall dynamic and that therefore is sustainable. And they're both right and they're both separate, but usually for sustainable regards then what's a long-term use of something that can be managed rather than exploited and then short-term.
So where does the United States, I mean, this clearly is a global topic. We're talking with Crystal Johnson. It's Women's History Month. She's my last wonderful guest during Women's History Month, so we'll get to her personal aspects of this in just a few minutes. But from a global perspective, where is the United States in this whole movement?
That's a great question. We are leaders just because the role that we play in the global economy. And so a lot of the world, I feel, is looking to see how are we going to step up and take a position and move forward. However, as far as what we're actually implementing and practicing, we are not leading. And we really should be. We really want to follow some models that are coming out, believe it or not, from Europe. Not just from the Nordic and German areas where they've always designed things with an energy efficiency with a very lean understanding, but even what they implement and for policy with their housing, their transportation, and so forth. And then with business practices, it was very interesting. Last year, Prince Charles had visited the United States, and he spoke to the national organization or affiliations associated with CPAs. And he really spoke that globally people are starting to recognize and implement sustainability, but unless the business sector here in the United States advances in it, it really may be a moot point because we have such a large impact that if we're not on board, what are the how much can the other efforts actually you know, contribute?
Right,
ask for us to think about how to shift the business model to include sustainability in it and really prove that it has better bottom line benefits anyway. So we're at an interesting point right now, and I'm more hopeful than not and feel that we're at a position where the business sector overall is aware of the opportunity to incorporate sustainability, not just because there's pressure from stakeholders, from their customers, suppliers, but also that they are maybe a little bit on the fence of how do they actually implement it, how is it relevant to them, is it a cookie-cut approach or it can be customized. And I'm really pleased to try to provide information and be a resource to say that it really is individualized depending on what your company's mission is, what industry that you are in, but there's always something that each business niche can do.
And
we're at a point now where the conversations are starting to happen. People are aware, but they haven't taken that last step. And once they do, that will be a very interesting point. So we're at an exciting time. And I have to say, from my experience in the last 20 years, that this is the time when people recognize the value more so than any time in my career before. They're familiar with what is being spoken, even though they may not have put it into practice.
Right.
So
well, I mean,
this is,
certainly it's everywhere. I mean, you see the symbols.
Yes.
You know, we have now. I have great big recycle bins that I have to use.
Yes.
With my refuse company, and so it's gone from these little bitty boxes to this great big mandatory bin, and it's large, and now I know why it's large, because they want me to throw stuff in it so I can recycle instead of throwing things away. So, I think people understand it on the macro level, but the micro level, it sort of gets lost in the weeds. And what I think would be great, Crystal, with your wonderful website, is if you can put a glossary, if you can have a web page. And put a glossary so that, you know, if people are confused, you can just send them right to that glossary and they can study for themselves. And just have,
true.
You know, sustainability 101.
Yes.
In five easy steps or something. That would be really helpful. Now, answer this question for me. And I've been to a couple of workshops and sessions, and I'm looking forward. We're going to talk about your conference coming up on April 30th. I do plan on attending. So I've been to some events, and I'm moving into the green space. But I'm fascinated. I think you're correct in terms of what Europe is doing. They certainly have space issues more so than we do.
Yes.
Even New Zealand has very stringent laws on how things can be recycled. I went to a session with one of my clients when I was speaking at a convention, and I was fascinated with what takes place in New Zealand. So those things are done. But what happens with all of our electronic equipment that we have, and you know, every 6 months it's all upgraded and people want to get the latest, fanciest whiz bang, and so we have now a growing legion of all these computers and other electronic devices that get shipped off to places far and beyond.
Yes.
Doesn't that create an environmental problem too, Crystal?
It does. The situation that we have environmentally, you know, across the board, from waste management to consumption to energy, let alone hazardous materials and land use, it's extremely complex and convoluted. There's not one quick answer, but we can slowly begin to address all the parties, all the players. And the one with the waste management is one that not many people really understand. We do have e-waste, and how we manage it, it does really sometimes get sent to other places, to Africa or to India, and it's used and hopefully in a manner that can be replenished. Sometimes it's not, it creates a waste and itself leaches and creates other impacts.
Right.
We're now starting to see a growing business that captures that e-waste potential because there's money to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I'm really pleased about is that for the business community, that's starting to awaken to environmental, not just problems, but that people are interested in solutions, that there is great opportunity in creating solutions. And now people are starting to think in eco-entrepreneurial ways and say, how can we address issues rather than from just a for-profit or an impact way, but how can there be businesses generated from being environmentally responsible? And so that's one thing that's starting to pick up that can hopefully capture some of the e-waste. But one thing that, before we even get to talking about how do you handle your waste or recycle material, is to look at the product stewardship and the supply chain and how we're packaging, making things, and shipping them so that maybe we don't have to necessarily recycle, because I do want to reference that there's an environmental impact to everything. There's nothing benign, whether it's short-term, long-term. It impacts the air, the water, the land, your backyard or my backyard. So even when we recycle to break something down and reconstitute it, there is an air quality impact and usually some water processing. So there's a wastewater, and that has to go somewhere. And depending on where that place is sited, is it creating or adding to existing air quality impacts that makes it exceed or not? And so now really to back up and say, it's not necessarily about recycling, handling it after, but how can we design things then like with the green chemistry, so it's a plant-based, it can be biodegradable, or the packaging is minimized. So we're just really starting to have those conversations, and that's
right.
what I'm really looking forward to, is not how do we capture it on the backside, but how do we prevent it in the first place.
And you certainly are. You're providing your expertise with your consulting services, and immediately I think about all these plastic bags that get caught up in trees,
yes.
that get
yes.
floating around in water waterways, whether it's an
yes.
ocean or a river. And, again, the impact is enormous, not just here in the United States, but it's really
yes.
enormous in other parts of the world, too. So what I hear you saying is that it's not just a matter of what we do with our recycled goods, but how can we repackage and manufacture and create products and packaging that is a lot more biosensitive or eco-friendly, should I say.
Yes. That's thankfully that's an emerging market. Really excited for how that goes, but that has to be the solution. I'm glad that people are recycling and are aware of it, and that should still continue. There are impacts, as I said, to it, but really the main way to root out that issue is to let's prevent it from in the first place. And I know that I think Stonyfield Farms has moved from their using like a plastic for their yogurts to a plant-based biodegradable one. And I picked up some food the other day at a health food store, and I was really glad to see that the packaging was also a vegetable-based bagging. It wasn't a petrochemical. And so I was really glad about that. In truth, I had not investigated fully how they processed it, but I believe that it is an improvement over a petro-based product. But
now, the only thing, though, and you're talking about a farm that's here in the greater Boston area, the only thing that I find is that when you go green or when you deal with products that are environmentally friendly, the price is higher. And how does that impact communities of color? Most specifically people, you know, who have a couple of
right.
kids, and, you know, they've got to watch every penny. So they want to do the right thing, but they can't buy all their food at Trader Joe's or Whole Foods or some
right.
of the other stores in the country that, you know, would provide this kind of packaging.
It's a very good point, and it's really interesting because there are a lot of brands out there, there are a lot of green markets, and they really are interested in providing, their products to a larger pool, and there are a lot of stores that price it and control it. And when you're trying to talk to different people, particularly people who might have some financial concerns about how do you afford this, then you
right.
really also have to then think about, you know, how can you not and what are other ways? Because environmental issues, including the choices we make with the food, is it organic, which really means there's less herbicides, pesticides, fungicides. As a result, you're getting less contamination to your body and your children's body, but you're also then getting more nutrients because it's been shown that if you are eating food that is traditionally or conventionally raised with herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, their vitamin count is at least 40 to 60% lower. So you're also eating food that may not be as potent as you think it is, and environmental issues translate to public health issues.
Right.
That's also what you're exposed to. And so now starting to think for people, what's the best way to invest? And then say, can you grow your own food? Can we get green markets into the area? Can you work with your professional affiliations in communities of color and say, let's create a venue to get these farmers here. Let's network with those farming affiliations to let them know that we're a market here. And that way you can go outside of perhaps from the Trader Joe's and try to grow your own food. Because here, I know in Boston, Massachusetts, a real push to find urban agriculture and living wages around it is a great conversation that, you know, is starting to happen.
Sure.
But it's very hard for families who are wondering how can they do that. And one thing I say is even if it's frozen food, that's usually less expensive in organic forms. And that from Trader Joe's, it is more, it's around the same maybe a little bit more, but not a huge amount more. And so you can always buy frozen vegetables that are organic or raised in a without, you know, traditional chemicals. But it's something that I think each family should really investigate and consider the cost, because it's a catch-22, because if you're not consuming it, then the prices won't go down, because once they realize there's a great market there and a great demand, then they're going to have more farmers growing it to meet the supply, and that helps bring the price down. So I remember years ago, going to wanting to support green farmers and saying, yeah, it is a little bit higher, but I need to use the power of my money to say this is what is important and this is what I want to invest in and then contribute to the growing market. But at the same time, have to be smart and say, well, tonight I'm going to have to eat frozen vegetables, or I'm going to have to grow it, or I'm going to cultivate and say, let's get a community green market set up here somehow.
Right. Well, short of families, individual families, having that plot of land in the backyard where they can grow their own food.
Or even in their kitchen. It can be small. Like if you're like, okay, I want some vegetables. I know some people in their windowsills or on tables, grew something. It's not so much in the plot of land because your land, your soil may not be clean. You have to get it tested. So there's small ways, and it's not all practical, but there are some options that you can consider if you were really concerned of how do I eat healthy without breaking the bank.
Well, that's, again, more suggestions for your website.
That is true. That's very good. Thank you.
That would be because I'm always looking toward the individual, the average person.
Yes,
what can that person actually do to make this happen? Now, share with us information about your upcoming conference that you're having on April 30th.
Thank you. That is the third annual Sustainable Economy Conference, and the conference brings together the government, business, academic, nonprofit, and community sectors to foster sustainable communities and to create a viable 21st century economy. And what that means is that for all these sectors, there is a sustainable economy dynamic. And there are great conversations happening individually in each of these sectors for, you know, where they're going, how they're implementing and addressing sustainability, but really recognizing that they have to work together in new ways to partner, new ways to do business, and that we can create these networks, and that really then fosters a stronger community and then ripples out into the local economy. And I'm really pleased that it's been well received. I had the Massachusetts governor as a keynote speaker for the premier event in 2010, and this year, four federal regional administrators who oversee, you know, policy, planning, and funding, and represent the EPA and housing and transportation and labor, which are the key issues we're dealing with now, are all participating because they see that there is a sustainable economy dynamic. These are the parties involved, and we do have to come together with groups that we usually may have been opposing, but we're at such an extreme situation economically and environmentally that the time calls for it.
And I've seen the agenda, and again, I would encourage my listeners to, you can actually log on to Crystal's website. She has two web addresses. I'll give you both of them. You can log on to her website and look at all the speakers, very dynamic speakers who are going to be there. Sandy Casey Buford, who I met you through, Sandy.
Oh, she's
Casey
wonderful, yes.
Buford, and others. Kim Dukes Rivers is going to be there as well. Shauna Ferguson. These are all colleagues and friends of mine. And a whole host of other people who are going to be at this amazing conference. This is very, for me, it's very embryonic. You don't hear people talk about this a lot, even though it's in the airwaves. We know all about it, and we definitely are living our lives as a direct result and impacting the environment. It's fascinating for me to hear what you're saying because you have a knack of putting things in practical terms where you can say, oh, okay, now I get it. You're breaking it down, and it really is quite helpful. But you can go to www.ISESplanning, that's I-S-E-S, planning.com, or you can go to HTTP and then :// sustainableeconomyconference.com. sustainableeconomyconference.com. Register, find out more about it, and learn how you can be very proactive in this field. In closing, Crystal Johnson, since you are a woman of color, you are in this space, which, again, is very embryonic, and we really haven't even sunk our teeth into the impact of this and how we collectively, either within government or corporations or organizations or individually, how we really can make a difference. What do you see on the horizon for people getting in this field, certainly people of color getting in this field, and definitely women as we close out Women's History Month? What are your thoughts on that?
It's a growing field, thankfully. You can see that in all the schools having programs, and all companies now are incorporating green teams or having a separate person hired for sustainability. The conference pulled together diversity and sustainability. That's been the platform. It's always been both, and recognizing
Great.
That if companies, yet alone communities, really effectively incorporate both, how those are solutions.
Mm-hmm.
As a woman of color, I'm really excited to see those platforms together and advance them together, and they're both well-received, and in the conference always have issues of diversity for how it can serve communities or companies. And the role of women in creating a 21st century economy is a key panel that I have, because I feel that women are poised to really be the solution drivers. As I say, in truth, we do not contribute to the problem so much as we are going to be the solution for it. And I write a blog on women in the environment, and I had just had quoted that in 2009, the Dalai Lama, who is, you know, well respected for his
right.
opinion, was speaking at a peace conference, and people said, "What do you think about the world? What is happening with peace, and what's going to happen, you know, with the state of the affairs?" And he said, "The women of the West are going to be the solution, and we are the women of the West." And there are many reasons why he could have said that versus how we each can imagine why he did say that. And the role of women in leadership, we are natural leaders. Anybody who says otherwise is trying to deny a great potential. And it's also been proven from some of the people who are speaking on the panel from the Department of Labor, who's advancing sustainability in women and recognizing that when you invest in women, it has greater impact not only for the family but the surrounding community. We have Criterion Ventures that recognizes the value of investing with a gender lens, and that when companies have women in leadership, not quotas, but women in leadership, they have higher profits that are 28, I've seen quotes from 28 to 56% more, and that they also create a culture of collaboration, communication that really fosters more success and you know, a better drive. So we have different perspectives on there, as well as the important step is, if that's the case in the role of women in creating this 21st century economy, how do we empower women to accept that responsibility, and how do we open up the cultures in corporate businesses to allow for such? And how do they manage that by recognizing that, okay, this does prove and improve the bottom line, but what are the steps to get there? And so that's the conversation that we're bringing forth, and I'm really excited about that. And I'm eager for all women and women of color to take a lead in, of course, their families, as they probably do, as well as in their choices that they make in their companies, whatever
Great.
Field that they are in. The choices we make at home, the choices that we make at work, and things that we are exposed to at work, the power you have in making choices that impact the environment through your choices at home and work, and the schools that our children go to. The women are at the core of that, really, to have a voice and to begin to express it, to educate yourself. And that way, I think we'll all be little points of light that will add up to a great shift.
Well, certainly when it comes to women, we are certainly the nurturers of the world. And when
we
either have our own children or whether we raise other people's children, the impact that we have and the direction that we take has everything to do with how we pass on those skill sets to the next generation. And this topic just lends itself hand in hand with that. I love the fact that you have married diversity with environmental sustainability.
Yes.
Just love it. Love it.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Crystal. And
thank you, Carol.
Your phone number for those who would like to have more conversations, again,
yes.
you can go to 617-416-4915. Crystal Johnson, you've been a terrific guest. Good
thank
luck,
so
and I
much,
look forward
Carol.
To seeing you on the 30th.
Good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, this has been a real active month. We have had a great opportunity to just run the landscape. Crystal spent several years in California and then New York and now here in the greater Boston area. But when I think about what we've done this month, we've really done a great job covering women historically, what's going on in the future, what's going on now, and the important piece of what we can all do in terms of capturing and becoming better people, better women, better moms, aunts, cousins, business leaders, community organizers. Women are important in the world, and we are just saluting all of the women who have come before us. We are saluting those women who are in the trenches now. We are trying to help those women who need to have help, and we are trying to be the beacon lights for those who will need us in the future. Women's History Month is our history. It is an important part of who we are and the fabric of our lives, and I hope that you will reflect on Women's History Month, not just now, but certainly in the coming months to go. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week with another show. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas. Enjoy the weekend or the week.